Coming up next on Tech News Today, Amazon has a delivery for you, and it's coming from inside the house. Also, DJI's new Mavic drone is lighter than the iPhone 7 Plus. Facebook for Work hopes to make Facebook the social network for your business. We tear down iFixit's process for its teardowns. And SpaceX has a plan, a very detailed plan, to get us all to Mars. All that and more coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1607, recorded Tuesday, September 27th, 2016.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Gazelle, the online marketplace for buying and selling used gadgets. Shop from a variety of certified pre-owned electronics or trade one in for cash. Give a new life to a used device. Visit gazelle.com today.
And by LinkedIn Learning, develop talent and keep skills current with expert-led on-demand e-learning. To request a demo for your organization or get a free individual trial, visit learning.linkedin.com/twit.
Welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we talk about all of the tech news.
I think we should.
We should. Yeah. We are the Kermit and Miss Piggy of Tech News today.
Hi-ho, Kermit the Frog here.
I had no idea that you had that impression.
That's all I can do with the Kermit voice.
You can't read the news. Can you read all
I
the
can't
news?
Read the no, I can't do that. It's going to just sound weirder the more I try.
Okay.
Basically.
Right. Well, maybe we should do the news in your
normal
own voice.
In your own or voice. I could be Miss Piggy. No, okay. I'm not going to do that. How would you feel if Amazon came into your home to deliver a package? Amazon, is that you inside the house? In Amazon's pursuit of faster, 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 the company announced same-day delivery for Prime users in Toronto, and that's certainly impressive on its own. Then the information comes along with a report that shows Amazon has working relationships with two companies that might someday give Amazon deliveries direct access to your home. August is a company that creates smartphone-controlled internet-connected locks for the home. And Garage.io builds connected garage door openers. At checkout, a user could opt for in-home delivery using those products. And in some cases, all that extra packaging that Amazon's known for, you get like this little thing and it's wrapped in this gigantic box. You could opt to not, have that removed from the delivery because it's coming straight from the warehouse, I suppose. And so it would cut down on packaging and waste.
That part sounds good. The rest of it just sounds like Amazon is, at its best when they're making it convenient for us to just buy a bunch more stuff.
Yeah, and not have to leave, not have to go anywhere. Just set it on the counter, Amazon.
Right.
Okay.
Open it up for me. Set it up. Just
That's next. It's like the geek right. squad of Amazon.
Yeah,
is
exactly.
Next.
Whatever I bought, use it for me because I'm in VR and I can't bother to use the thing that I just bought. Yeah,
in VR.
It's incredible. I mean, they're really owning this space. You know, they want to own this space of, home automation with the Echo. And then now, like, the smart lock and the, the smart garage that so that you can easily get your packages. I mean, I guess it's if you never want to get off the couch or if you are not going to be home and you want your package. I mean, that happens sometimes. I usually get stuff delivered here at work, but, then I'm not at work, so I have to come in and get it. So if I could just put a beacon inside me and Amazon could know wherever I was and just drop the thing on my head, that would work for me.
I mean, it's pretty common to hear, and we've said it plenty of times on this show, that things like this are, then you never have to leave the house. You can be as lazy as you want. And I think really what it boils down to actually is that people live hyper-productive lives now. It's like our lives are so busy, so chaotic, that the idea of also carving out time to go to the store to pick up that thing doesn't make sense when it's easy to place the order, have them walk into your front door and put it on your countertop. That frees you up to do all the other things that, would make it prohibitive for you to do that. Mm-hmm. So, that plays to Amazon's strengths right there. This isn't their only time doing this this as well. Earlier this month, and I can't remember, I don't think we talked about it on the show because I just discovered it today, but Amazon began a pilot program with Daimler to deliver packages to the trunk of your car.
That is the weirdest part of this story. Why the trunk of my car? It's like I'm already out. Why don't I just buy the thing? Why did I have to order it from Amazon if I'm driving around?
I guess if you're going to be out and about doing stuff, the thing might as well just magically appear in the trunk of your car.
Like I said, just drop it on my head wherever I am. You know, you said like we live more productive lives. I think we live, and you said we were busy and chaotic. I think we're more busy and chaotic than we are productive. Like I think this we're more productive.
In our brains, we might think we're productive.
We're not.
But yeah, and all of the conveniences, in air quotes, that the internet brings, we think that this makes things better, but maybe it doesn't. Maybe it just makes things worse.
Yeah.
And that's outside of Amazon's problems. That's our own problem. That's my problem, basically.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, 2016 appears to be the year of the foldable drone. GoPro announced their $800 Karma last week, and today DJI unveiled the $999 Mavic, which is not only foldable, but it fits in the palm of your hand. It doesn't really fit in the palm of your hand. It fits in your hand. You can hold it with one hand, which most drones do. It's not like that. Jason has one.
I've got it right here. It fits in the palm of my hand.
That's not it. It's bigger than that.
Okay, yeah, this is
If you want to buy the Mavic without the controller, it's only $749, and that is $50 less than the Karma. If you're watching the video, you'll see the DJI Mavic right now. Ben Popper from The Verge said it's as light as an iPhone 7 Plus.
What?
So, yeah, I know.
I mean, it looks light. In his hands, it looks like, I mean, it's not. You're used to these things being pretty darn heavy and unwieldy, and this thing looks very manageable.
Yeah, the Karma was supposed to be small enough to fit in your backpack, but this one is to be, you know, can fit in your backpack and presumably your hand. And, you know, so the GoPro is $1,000 this one is $1,000 and it comes with the camera. Now, you know, the Karma, you have to add the camera. You have to add the GoPro. Unless you already have a GoPro, then you can add it. The Karma does a few other things like image stabilization and that sort of thing. And, you know, like we talked to Brian, like you can take the camera off of it and just use the camera separately. You can't remove, doesn't appear you can remove the camera from the Mavic.
This is cool, though. 40 mile an hour speeds, 4 mile range. It has gesture controls with computer vision stuff happening. So basically when you're out there, you can use your arms to make a Y and the drone's going to focus its attention on you. You can use your hands to frame your face and it'll fire off an aerial selfie.
Perfect.
Stuff like that, you know, for all of those that need aerial selfies. That's the next thing in selfie technology. And then, like you said, it can be controlled on your smartphone. It's going to cut the cost down. It also has a tap-to-fly mode. So basically, it'll take off, fly, return home, and land on its own with the touch of a button, essentially. Very cool, but expensive.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if any of you don't know this, I mean, you probably already do. But, like, you know, if you're buying this for a child, you can get a $40, perfectly good $40 SEMA drone on Amazon. They'll drop it right on your head. Or maybe another drone by the holidays will drop it.
They'll use the drone to deliver the drone to you.
So, I mean, that, you know, if you think you're going to lose the drone, it's going to land somewhere where you can't, you know, get it anymore and fly away, that sort of thing. Maybe, you know, the $40 SEMA would be a better purchase for you than this $800. But
yeah, or one of these that I think Tony Wang, what did he say he got this for? It was a Black Friday special. I think he got it for like $25-$30 or something. This tiny little thing.
But no camera. There's no camera.
No camera that I can tell anyways. Yeah. There might be one on here. I just can't see it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. YouTube announced a new app targeting emerging markets. That is the next billion users. Who often suffer from mind-numbingly slow connectivity speeds. And the app is called YouTube Go. You don't throw Pokeballs at YouTube stars. You don't try and catch them all. That's not what's going on here. It's a standalone app with a small footprint. It's designed to operate seamlessly even on the cheapest of phones. So it stores content locally. That's going to keep users from ringing up data while they're out and about on the go. When you choose to download a video, the app will actually tell you how much data that download will use. It's all about kind of being aware of the data cost, basically, to users, because in these emerging markets, data is incredibly expensive. And so things like the normal YouTube app, like you open up the YouTube app and it's caching all this content, it's loading all this stuff. If you want to like check out the video, it loads this huge packet to get the video started. This kind of cuts down on a lot of that. It compresses and caches thumbnails, you know, with a speed that makes the whole experience kind of seem seamless. Even if you're offline, it does a lot of that when you happen to be online and happen to have like Wi-Fi access or whatever. Shows a few frames of a preview of the video, and that'll give the user the chance to kind of decide if they want to spend that data on it. It limits the amount of time dedicated to ads to 6 seconds if there are ads shown. So a lot of really great features targeted at emerging markets.
Yeah, emerging markets, specifically India is where they're targeting it. 10,000 people in India come online every hour. 10,000 people an hour. I mean, India is the market that everyone wants. So I'm curious about how this relates to the announcement next week. They're going to be coming out with these phones, these, you know, made by Google phones. I mean, every, you know, Apple's been working really hard to get into India. Like, all the phone makers want this emerging market. And so I'm wondering if this is tied in there, if it's like, okay, well, you know, you can get the made for Google phone and it'll have you can have not much internet access. I don't know. I'm guessing that the made for Google phones might be like beyond the price range that they're aiming for.
But yeah, the Pixel phones, from what we can tell, are definitely on the premium side of things, like even more so than anything that they've done before, like more in the Galaxy S7 range price-wise. And Google's really tried to do the emerging markets Android push. That was Android One. And I think Android One is still a thing. It's, you know, it was a program designed to bring low-cost hardware and very conscious hardware and features that are super conscious about the limitations of some of these emerging markets, from data to storage and all that kind of stuff, and do something with that. And haven't proven to be very much of a success. So I don't know if that means, maybe they announce something next week that would tie into this. That would be interesting to see if they could kind of dig themselves out of the mess they already have with Android One, because I don't think that is very successful.
No, it's not.
No, well, not compared to, I mean, there's just so much competition in that space. I think there's options now.
Yeah. Facebook Lite is similar. That's the same sort of thing. You know, you can have Facebook even if you don't have, you know, a lot of data or fast internet access. You can still have your Facebook. So. Startup Color Genomics wants to make it easier for everyone to perform cancer screening tests at home. The San Francisco Bay Area-based company, which was started by ex-Google and Twitter engineers, offers $250 saliva-based tests to detect risk of breast, ovarian, colon, pancreatic, prostate, uterine, colorectal, and stomach cancer. Now, these tests usually cost between $1,500 to $4,500. The company is now teaming up with a nonprofit and private donors to subsidize the costs to offer $50 tests of two first-degree relatives of people who've already tested positive for one of the mutations on Color's test. So this is great. I mean, I think that we talk about so much new technology and how, like we were just talking about Amazon, it lets us buy things, it lets us take selfies, aerial selfies. But when you talk about how all this technology can really change healthcare and make it possible for people to get tests at home, this is the stuff that I really love talking about. You do need approval from a medical professional for these tests. So it's different than 23andMe, which is sort of just like over the counter and take it. And, you know, so I'm excited about this. There's lots of investors, including Bono. They have $45 million in Series B funding. And they say they use machine learning to keep costs low.
Yeah, that's important right there. Because when I saw the kind of the delta between, you know, it's either $1,500 to $4,500 or $50. I'm like, okay, well, that's a really big difference. Like, what are you getting here? Is there a same level of accuracy? And
it's
all this
the
kind
same
of stuff?
Test.
But yeah, I mean, that's what I mean. Like, seeing that there's all of this subsidization happening behind the scenes to kind of bring this down. Like, it's kind of a no-brainer. Like, why not? Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, why wouldn't you is the good question. Yeah, I mean, why wouldn't you? So, yeah, it's not like this is a $50 test. It's cheap versus those other tests.
Yeah,
those other
right.
tests are the same, and just some people are saying, yeah, I believe in this. I'm going to give it funding. I'm going to pay for it. And so, yeah, we'll see.
AI automates the DNA analysis. It automates the creation of family trees. That's actually really cool. I like the idea of that. Very cool stuff. Get ready, because Facebook is prepping its own take on Slack called Facebook at Work. seems like everybody's working on their own take for Slack. It could launch in a few weeks' time, according to the information. The service would charge companies according to the number of employees within an organization. No cost has been revealed yet. Facebook is hoping that business users will get as hooked on the service as traditional users have proven to be with Facebook itself. This is about company-wide communication tools, not just like team-based chats, which is a large part what Slack is really focused on. This is really, I mean, it's exactly what it sounds like. It's Facebook for business. So you've got the news feed, you've got groups, Messenger, events, live video, all within the enterprise, let's say, all focused, like it really is a social network focused on your employees, essentially. Show what posts are trending within the company and in the news feed, stuff like that. The AI that Facebook employs would also determine, or could also determine, how happy employees are or how they feel about certain topics and efforts based on how they interact. Which that, I don't know how I feel about that. That's a little weird, but
yeah, God forbid you ask your employees or do, like, you know, something that would make me say whether they're happy or not.
Why? When it could be automated by a robot.
So they're saying, like, you know, that you know, oh, Jason posted 12 stickers yesterday in Facebook for work. Like, he must really love his job. Or maybe they would tell, like, you really don't love your job. Who knows?
Yeah, don't post the wrong animated GIF in that news feed. They could learn a lot about how you feel about that project.
Yeah, I wonder how they'll be able to maintain corporate privacy and, you know, integrity of the networks. This seems like, you know, the people, I'm sure there are people at Facebook smarter than me, so I'm sure they've already thought of this, but it doesn't seem like it's, you know, going to be successful.
I don't know. They've been testing it privately for more than 18 months. They have large companies on board, Heineken, Starbucks, Royal Bank of Scotland. Just name a few. So they've had this process going. We've heard about it in pieces up until now. I don't know. I guess the challenge would be getting businesses on board with trying it out. But I think if it existed, depending on the size of the business and how kind of technology minded the staff, the employees are, I think it could kind of be a hit. I'm very curious to see how it's received.
I would see it in a company that was really, I guess, yeah, if you're talking about like Starbucks and, you know, they have offices all over the world. And so, you know, if you didn't have face-to-face interaction, I guess I was just thinking of like our little 35 employee this year.
We could already do this in a number of ways. Yeah. But I mean, that's the point, right? Like, if we do this in a number of ways, why not have it all under the same umbrella? There is always the kind of pushback, the automatic knee-jerk reaction of, another thing for Facebook to, you know, get its paws into my life. Mm-hmm. And maybe there would be resistance there. I can actually see that.
Mm-hmm. Well, the CEO of iFixit is here to tell us just how to drill that headphone jack into your iPhone. I'm just kidding. But he is here to talk about smarter ways to find out what's inside your iPhone. But first, let's take a minute to thank Gazelle, the sponsor of this episode. Now, if you accidentally drilled a hole in your brand new iPhone, maybe you'll want to buy your next phone used at Gazelle, the trusted online marketplace for buying and selling used electronics. Trade in your old device for cash, buy a certified pre-owned one, or do both. For trade-ins, simply visit gazelle.com, find your device, and get an instant quote. Shipping is free and payment is fast. If you're looking to buy a certified pre-owned device, Gazelle has a variety of iPhones, including the iPhone 6S and the iPhone 6S Plus. They have iPads, they have Samsung Galaxy phones, they have so much to choose from. Now, each device is fully inspected, backed by a 30-day return policy, and sold without a carrier contract. Go to gazelle.com, see what your old device is worth, and check out the selections of certified pre-owned devices. Gazelle is now providing financing on all devices by Affirm. All you have to do is provide your basic information, then you'll get instantly approved, and you can pay off in 3, 6, or 12 months. Easy monthly payments can be made through bank transfer, check, or debit card. Just select financing with Affirm at checkout. Gazelle also offers a 12-month warranty for cell phones and iPads that's powered by Assurance Solutions. That will cover water damage, cracked screens, hardware defects, and more. Help is available 24/7 to process claims and return your device ASAP. Here's more benefits of buying pre-owned devices from Gazelle. Devices are available in good and excellent condition. condition. Good condition shows some gentle signs of wear and tear, but offers consumers great prices on still great devices. And all devices have been put through a rigorous 30-point inspection process that ensures they are in perfect working order. So check out what they have. They have iPhones. They have Galaxy phones. They have iPads. They have Galaxy S5. They have everything. Check it out. Go there and see what they have, and you'll find something that you want. Give new life to used electronics. Trade in for cash or buy a certified pre-owned. Visit gazelle.com today. Last week, we told you about how the good people at iFixit had torn down the new iPhone 7 and the iPhone 7 Plus before mine had even arrived. I've got mine
in hand.
Don't
tear that one down.
I've got mine in hand now, so it's time to take it apart and see what's inside. I'm just kidding. We're not taking mine apart. But we have invited Kyle Ween, CEO of iFixit, to talk about the devices that they tore down. Welcome, Kyle.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So first, tell us a little bit about the process behind the teardowns. Where do these phones come from?
Yes, we have to get the phones as soon as possible because we want to tell people the repairability score before they buy them in the U.S. And so we play the time zone game, which means that we go all the way to the other side of the international dateline, and usually we get them in Australia. This time we decided to mix it up, and we went to Tokyo. So these are Japanese watches and phones.
And phones. So who do you have that's taking it apart? Is it a team, and is it more than one? How many do you usually use to do one of your teardown pieces?
Yeah, so we put all of our engineers on this. So every engineer at iFixit is working on these teardowns. The team in Japan, we had three people on the ground. Normally, we can do it with two, but this time we wanted to do both the iPhone 7 Plus and the Apple Watch teardowns simultaneously. So we had two teardowns going on at the same table, and we had one photographer taking shots of both teardowns at the same time. Which is crazy. It was very intense. We were actually limited a little bit by the bandwidth of the pipe that we could get the photos out of the room back to the U.S.
I'm assuming part of your teardown is not drilling a hole into the headphone jack area, right?
We didn't do that. I saw that. This is
okay.
Yeah, it seems like it might work because it turns out that where the headphone jack was is just a piece of plastic. So as long as you don't drill too deep.
So you're saying that the drilling your iPhone will work?
Well, I think it won't kill the phone. There are other places on the phone that you can drill into that will kill the phone. But it just so happens that if you drill very precisely right there, the phone won't stop working, I think.
Well, we think. But do you have
still,
the tools?
Don't drill right there.
Yeah. Do you have the tools to fix it? That's your next thing. We should say, yeah. I probably should have said this from the outset, that iFixit has been a sponsor on the Twit Network. You're not a sponsor of this show, but you have been a great sponsor for a long time. But this is not sponsored content. We are not paying you to be here, nor are you paying us to be here. So just now that I got that out of the way.
I think we're all just really big fans.
Yes. We like to see you calmly taking things apart for a good reason. And yeah. I mean, we talked a little bit about why you do it. But I mean, why did you get involved in teardowns? What inspired you to start this business to show people what's inside?
Yeah, well, I got started just pulling apart my iBook, and I realized that it was kind of a complicated process, and there weren't repair manuals available. And so I decided, well, after I've gone through, like, the first time you take something apart is always the hard time. So once I had gone through the effort of pulling it apart, I knew how it came together, it came apart, went back together. So I decided to do it again. So I took it apart again. I took pictures, put them online, and they got popular, and the rest is kind of history. We've been doing this for a long time now.
I think what scares me the most about doing this myself is that anytime I ever take something apart and then I put it back together again, there's always like pieces left over or something extra. I'm like, wait a minute, I've got two screws hanging out here. Those used to be inside. Now I have no idea where they go. You've got to have a lot of organization to actually pull this off, right?
Correct. And you're not crazy. That actually is really important. Organization is really critical. So I have here, this is an iPhone 7 that we pulled apart. And I've got, some of the pieces. But then I actually have, this is our magnetic mat. This is a sorting tray that we use. And you'll note I've got screws on here, and they're actually, it's magnetic. They're sticking to it. And the same thing with these metal pieces. And this is a dry erase board. So we use this, and we make incredibly detailed notes as we're pulling it apart. Because particularly the first time that we do a teardown, we're very slow and methodical. We have to know where everything goes back in. Because it's important. It's not just like, oh, I'm missing a couple of screws. On the iPhone, there's a couple screws that are longer than some of the others. And if you put the long screw in the short screw spot, you can kill the phone. Mm. So you have to be organized or you're not going to be successful. Yeah, but if you are, sure. And if you take your time and you use tools like this, you can be really successful. We've helped over 1 million people fix their iPhones.
And so if you go to the site, there's the step-by-step guide through the teardown, and then people can comment on it. Explain a little bit about how that works, the commenting, and is it like a Wikipedia-type thing, or how does that work?
Yeah, so this is kind of like real-time Wikipedia, because the whole thing is a wiki, so anybody can contribute, anybody can comment. So as we're writing it, other people are actually making changes to the teardown too, and then we're approving taking their suggestions and doing fact-checking and then approving their changes. Or people just comment and they give us ideas, or they say, hey, look over here. So it's like watching a Wikipedia article be written in real-time. And we have experts all over the world that have kind of gotten involved in the teardown process and like to tip us off. And there's some people that are just better at Bluetooth antennas than we are. So they'll say, hey, I think that's it, which is really helpful. So as you go down, we start out, it's just trying to figure out how to get inside. And usually that's the hardest part initially, is you have a thing like, how does it come open?
Right.
And like when we got the first Apple Watch, we had no idea. Like there's no screws on the outside. So how do you get into this thing? And we try a bunch of things. And then if there's no obvious way, then we start applying heat. That's the very first thing we do. We can't find screws. We start applying heat because we assume there's glue. And if there's glue, then it takes heat and prying and very carefully kind of guessing where the connectors are. And hopefully we don't break it the first time. But even if we do, then we know what the problems are, and then we document it, and then everybody else doesn't make the mistake the second time.
How many devices do you go through in this process? Because I have to imagine there are definitely some casualties, it sounds like.
Right. Well, and the teardown is kind of a dry run. It's the first time we've ever seen inside these things, and we're under a real tight timeline to get the teardown done. I mean, it's from the moment the product goes on sale to within 3-4 hours we've got photos online, and 8 hours we've got the complete teardown done. So that's really our first glance inside the product. And then we step back and we take a little bit more time and we take a couple more apart and we learn a little bit more and we figure out, did we do everything right the first time? Are there other shortcuts to getting in? And that's the beginning of our research into the repair manual. So writing the teardown really is the dry run for us writing the repair manual. And that's what we're doing right now in the lab next door here, where we have a whole bunch of iPhone 7s and we're pulling them apart and we're writing the repair manual.
And so I know you sell the kits as well. Did you have to create any new tools for the kit for the iPhone 7 or the iPhone 7 Plus?
Yeah, so we got real lucky with this. When the Apple Watch came out last year, we got halfway into the teardown and we got stuck. And it was funny because everybody that was taking apart, sometimes we have competition, there's other people trying to take apart. Everybody got stuck on the same thing, which was this tiny little screw. We're used to tiny screws. I mean, like this, here I can, this is about the oops, I don't even know if I can hold this up to the camera. This is a screw off of the iPhone, right? So this is a screw that's much smaller than a screw off the iPhone. And we run into this screw, and we're like, what do we do? And so we took a diamond file, and we actually filed down and modified one of our screwdrivers to get it open. And then we went back, and we told our tool team, we said, hey, this screw is in the Apple Watch. Like, we have to add it to our toolkit. So we have here, this is our 64-bit toolkit, and this has lots of little bits and drivers for opening things up. And so we added the Apple Watch bit, and we thought it was just for the Apple Watch. We did that at the beginning of the year, and then it turns out the iPhone 7 had the same screw. So I have shipped many, many thousands of toolkits since January that have the tool that you need to open the iPhone 7. And I think we got lucky and we're the only toolkit out there that can open the iPhone 7.
Awesome. So what about waterproofing? Everything's waterproof now. The watch or the phone is just water resistant, but it's got more waterproofing in it.
Right.
What have you found, and does that make it harder for you?
Yeah, it's interesting. The way that they did it, waterproofing can make things hard. So on some of the Fitbits, they waterproof the Fitbits. And the way that they do that is they just glue it together. And it's completely impossible to open up and repair. It's really frustrating. Apple did a much better job on this device. So in the iPhone, there are gaskets that go all the way around the edge. And if you look at the teardown, you'll see these little strings, like little white or black strings that are kind of hanging off on some of the photos. Those are the gaskets as we're pulling them free. So they don't get in the way of the disassembly, but we definitely notice them. And then when it comes time to reassemble, one of the things that we're working on is replacement adhesive, replacement gaskets, so that you can re-waterproof it.
And what about that dongle, the one, the lightning adapter? Have you guys looked inside that? I mean, it's tiny. I was surprised when I got my phone. It's so small, but do you know what's inside there?
Yeah, so the dongle is not possible to disassemble without destroying it. So if you have a sacrificial dongle, you can take a Dremel or take some kind. And so we have been cutting them open all week and taking a look. And we have x-ray photos that we're excited to be releasing in a couple days here. So the initial question about the dongle was, how does the iPhone drive analog audio if it doesn't have a digital audio converter built into the iPhone? And the answer is there's one built into the dongle. Mm-hmm. And so then I think the follow-up question is, okay, well, is the audio quality of the audio from this dongle going to be as good as the audio quality on the iPhone 6S? And time will tell. We're doing testing right now.
Awesome. Yeah, I think that I looked it up, and there was like a Vietnamese site that did it, but not as neatly as you guys do.
Working on it.
They sort of broke it open, but we don't need to show that.
It's challenging. I mean, we destroyed the first couple. Like, we just destroyed them in such a way that we couldn't take pretty pictures, so then we had to get more. It's just glued together. They took plastic, infused it, and there's no way in.
Well, I mean, the reason why I asked is because people were having trouble with it at first. They were, you know, saying they had it on their old headphones. So they'd use their old headphones and they'd attach the dongle. And then they wouldn't be able to answer the phone, you know, if they weren't listening to music or something. So obviously there's something in there. I guess that's been fixed with an update, though.
It sounds like that was a software glitch, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think people are having that problem just with the regular Lightning headphones. So all of a sudden, welcome to the world of software. Like, the analog was bulletproof. And we've been used to analog headphones for a long time. And all of a sudden, you're in the world of digital software and software, you know, updates and bugs. And you're going to have timing issues with the OS. And it's just a higher level inside the operating system. And so it's going to be buggier for a while until they deal with everything.
Mm-hmm. But they made room for that plastic thing.
Yeah.
Whatever it was.
So do you want to know what the plastic thingy was?
Yes.
It was a vent of some sort, right?
It was a vent. So in order for the GPS to work quickly, it really needs to know what elevation the phone is at, because the angle to the satellites is different if you're at the top of a mountain versus at sea level. So they have an altimeter inside, and the way an altimeter works is using a barometer, which checks the air pressure. But if you make the phone waterproof, you also kind of make it airproof, and so air can't get into the barometers, so there's no way in your waterproof phone to tell what the air pressure is. So they actually built what they call a barometric vent, which sounds like something you'd find at the bottom of the seafloor. The barometric vent is a little one-way vent, and the plastic doodad gives basically access from the air outside the phone to a part on the sensor inside the phone. It's kind of slick.
Okay, so switching gears a little bit from Apple devices to devices in general that you guys have torn apart. If I was to ask you the most surprising thing that you've discovered in your teardowns, would you have an obvious answer for that?
You know, we take so many things apart. I was surprised. I took apart a Keurig the other day, and I didn't realize Keurigs have more electronics in them than a laptop does. a lot of them have touch screens on them. They're very sophisticated. We talk about DRM on our coffee. Hey, this is a real thing. So that was surprising. You know, I've been really pleasantly surprised by some of the products we've taken apart from Dell and HP lately. HP has a tablet, the Elite X2, that's a competitor to the iPad Pro, that got a 10 out of 10 on the repairability score. It's phenomenally designed, and it's actually thinner than a lot of the Apple tablets.
So do you have a Moby Dick, like a white whale of teardowns, something that you really want to get inside badly?
I want to take apart Elon Musk's new rocket. I think that would be a blast. You know, when the rocket blows up, they call a RUD, a rapid unscheduled disassembly. And I would like to do a slow scheduled disassembly.
With lots and lots of cameras.
Yes.
You should tweet him that. I mean, he's very active on Twitter. See what he says.
I'm sure you could sacrifice one of those for
him. There you go. We ordered a Model 3, so that may be the first
Tesla. Wow. Oh, that's awesome. Well, of course, you do all this in the service of the environment so that we buy less and we fix what we have instead of upgrading all the time. And we appreciate that. And the Earth does too. Where can people find you?
Yeah, we're at ifixit.com, and we have instructions for thousands of things. It's not just electronics. We've got clothes and bikes and cars and you name it. Anything that you have that's broken, you got to be able to find instructions on iFixit to get it repaired.
Awesome.
Cool stuff.
Kyle Weens is the CEO of iFixit, and he's KWeens on Twitter. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Kyle. Take care. All right, so DJ Virus actually writes in and says, Apple finally introduced an aperture of 1.8 with the wide-angle lens, which has been on the LG V10 since release. Every time I'm out with friends, people prefer taking photos with my LG V10 instead because of the dual flash and excellent photo quality in low-light settings. So, besides the processor and the extra RAM, is it really worth an upgrade from a 6S to a 7, especially with a high price tag? Can you do more coverage on some of the flagship Android phones that will be coming out this year? The LG V series, fantastic devices. The V20 is getting closer to stock Android, which makes the UX even better. Yeah, and I think we're trying to touch on all of the major and maybe some of the outlying device releases, because there are a ton of releases for Android, you know, versus like Apple's release a year, let's say. But his first question is it worth the upgrade?
I don't know. I mean, I think that for me, yes, because I'm in the Apple. You know, I have all my stuff on in the Apple environment, in the ecosystem. That's the word I'm looking for. But I mean, yeah, if you have the upgrade from the 6 to the 7, that I just answered someone else's question. I think I don't know yet. I've only had the phone for a week.
Yeah.
I think from the 6S to the 7, probably you don't need to. The camera's great, and if that's really what you are wanting, if you really want, you want that portrait effect, you take a lot of pictures from far away of objects, if you want that zoom, then definitely it's worth it. Otherwise, I would say wait for the next phone, wait for the 8, because that's, you know, the anniversary, that's the 10 year anniversary of the iPhone, and I think that will be something to really upgrade to.
Yeah, that one you would imagine is going to be special in, you know, to a degree that the last couple of years have probably kind of not been, let's say, in comparison.
Right.
Let's say. But
yeah. And DJ's email was a little bit longer. I cut it down a little bit. But he was also saying, you know, and kind of calling us out for doing so much coverage of the new iPhone. When is it really worth it? So as opposed to all these other phones. So, yes, it's true. We do cover a lot of iPhones. And it's nice to hear from people who want to hear other phones being covered.
For sure. I mean, we had the V20 on All About Android a couple of weeks ago, and I got to kind of play around with it a little bit there, and yeah, it's super impressive. I would love to get my hands on it for an extended period of time. There's just so many devices coming out. Sometimes, actually, I mean, to be quite honest, in our position for this show, you know, we have limited slots. Sometimes it's hard to know what makes it and what doesn't, and at the expense of what else, you know? So, yeah, we do our best in picking the content for the show, but we appreciate hearing that feedback, and we'll try and kind of meet you where you're asking us to meet. So, up next, Elon Musk. We kind of talked a little bit about it ahead of schedule, but Elon Musk detailed his plans to get our butts to Mars. We'll talk about that. But first, let's take a minute to thank LinkedIn Learning. They're the sponsor of this episode. The shelf life of skills is less than 5 years. It's not very long. Many of today's fastest growing categories didn't even exist 5 years ago. Introducing LinkedIn Learning. It's personalized, expert-led, on-demand e-learning from LinkedIn. It's going to allow you to keep your team engaged. LinkedIn Learning is the perfect way to promote professional development. LinkedIn Learning will identify the precise skills you or your organization needs to achieve goals. It's going to even help you create personalized recommendations using LinkedIn's network intelligence. Your team's going to have access to more than 9,000 courses. That's going to keep you busy. More than 25 courses are added every week. Their library includes courses taught by world-class industry experts, covering topics ranging from leadership skills to design principles and programming, and a whole lot more. Learn anytime, anywhere. They have bite-sized segments that can be viewed on any device, online or offline. Those bite-sized segments, those videos, provide immediate problem-solving and can be downloaded to learn on the go. It's the perfect way to help team members close a skills gap without interrupting your latest project. And team solutions are actually available for as little as $2,000. Grow your network and your career. Visit learning.linkedin.com/twit to request a demo for your organization or get a free individual trial. That's learning.linkedin.com/twit. And we thank LinkedIn Learning for their support of Tech News Today.
TNT's fan of the day is Chris Pleishman on Twitter, who says, how I watch TNT with an Apple TV and a 4K TV connected to a MacBook Pro.
Dang.
So it looks like you're multitasking, Chris.
A little bit.
Is that what you guys do while you're watching? You're not just sitting
on
your couch?
You're not just focused? Focused on everything that we put on your screen?
That changes everything.
I think this is the way to do it. Although two screens... We've seen what, like probably four or five screens. Mm-hmm. So you got to step up your game a little bit.
Yeah. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup. Post it to Instagram, Google Plus, Twitter, Facebook. Use the hashtag HowIWatchTNT and we will find it.
All right. So SpaceX today detailed its plans to do something incredibly lofty, colonize Mars. Elon Musk took to the stage at the International Astronautical Conference in Guadalajara, Mexico today to lay out his vision for how it would happen. The talk was called Making Humans a Multiplanetary Species. And here's basically how it would work. It was a lot of information, so I tried to like cut it down to the nuts and bolts. SpaceX would employ the use of the reusable BFR. That stands for Big Beep Rocket, along with a BFS, which stands for Big Beep Spaceship. And I'm just keeping it classy for you guys. Mm-hmm. Propelling this interplanetary transport system are Raptor rockets. Those are capable of 680,000 pounds of thrust. The ship is going to be carrying 100 tons of cargo. That means 40 Raptor rocket engines would be needed just to get it off the ground. Once it's in orbit, it would be refueled and then start the process to take off to Mars. Musk says the cost of sending cargo to Mars traditionally would cost around $10 billion per person. He's targeting $200,000 per person and then eventually to get the cost down to $100,000 a person. And he says the way you do that, the way you lower the cost is by using reusable parts. They've been testing this for a lot of their missions lately, and you know, it plans to kind of, I mean, I have to imagine that's all set up for the, you know, lessons learned in order to employ this. Trips would take 100 people at a time, and while they're on the craft, they'd have access to, I think he called it a fun place. They'd have access to movie rooms, cafeteria, entertainment options. I don't know. I couldn't find where there was like the duration of the flight, how long people would be in that. I mean, fun place.
Unless you're going really fast, it's going to take you a long time to get there.
Yeah, it better be really, really fun place. Mars inhabitants would produce methane-based propellant once they land, and then that would send the ship back to Earth for reuse. Hmm. So, you know, it's all laid out. Musk says this is not hypothetical. He said, quote, "This is what we plan to make it look like." So lofty expectations, looking at, I think it's a 2022 for actual Mars flights, Dragon capsules starting to Mars in 2018.
But he said living on Mars by 2060, that a million humans could live on Mars by the 2060s. That's what he said in National Geographic. All this physics is very fascinating to me, but you know, during his presentation, I would just like to talk about his new mustache. And also, I am starting a Twitter campaign to start calling it a muskash.
A muskash. Ooh, I like it. So, I did not even notice his muskash.
I think the Engadget article has a picture. I know the BBC article had a picture. He's got a little bit of a muskash.
The musk. Mustache. I really like mustache. That's really good.
Well, I searched on Twitter. No one had said it yet, so I coined the term officially.
I wonder if you should get that Twitter account actually right away.
Mustache. Just I will try
mustache.
That.
Get
it's
it.
Probably too late already for that.
Yeah, we said it out loud, so it's done.
Yeah, but I think this is great, and I think Kyle has, I think Kyle can take apart do a teardown of the rocket. I mean, they have this, you know, Musk wants reusable rockets and, you know, iFixit wants reusable phones. So I think he has a chance.
Is Musk willing to let iFixit into the secret sauce of the Mars program? I'm not sure.
Like they're not, it's not like Musk is like Apple where they give away, you know, there's his mustache.
There it is. Kind of Tony Stark-ish, which fits his character. Mm-hmm. Kind of Salvador Dali-esque, which fits his craziness.
He's kind of crazy.
But good crazy.
Yeah.
We need people like him. Seriously, like his stuff might sound crazy, and some in chat were saying it's hyperbole, and sure, maybe it is, but I enjoy listening to it because somebody's actually like, A, thinking about it, and B, putting it into a form that we can all kind of evaluate. And, you know, there aren't a lot of people thinking about this kind of stuff in a public sense.
Yeah,
Elon Musk is.
I know. I don't think he's crazy. I have always been fond of Elon Musk, and I will continue to be. And I think, I think that he should go by the Apple route and start sending out his rockets for review to journalists.
Yeah.
And maybe.
Yeah. He should do that. Yeah, we should go for test drives or test flies or whatever. I'd do that. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us, tnt@twit.tv. You can leave us a short voicemail. That's 260-TNT-SHOW. You can find us on Twitter. We are at Muskash, not really, at Tech News Today TV.
You can find all the ways to subscribe to our show, and we want you to subscribe.
And maybe describe your first your viewing.
Describe to your friends what you like about this show. twit.tv/TNT, and you can find me on Twitter where you can promote my Muskash campaign. I am at Megan Maroney.
And I'm at Jason Howell. Thanks to our technical director, Kara Cole. Thanks to Bert for running the words on the screen that scroll up and keep us on point. Kevin for editing and making us look good. Thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Bye, everyone. Yeah!